Yeah. Kick a verse music group. Precise politics. J Love. Star Saxon, what up? WCNN.com.
Ain't none of y'all better.
What y'all
know
it.
About putting my work
on the block?
Ain't none of y'all better.
Let
you know it's so real.
Is it real?
None of y'all better.
Yeah, let's get it poppin'. The number one podcast for anything that's rockin'. Microphone masters, daddy, your only option. Sports talk, politics, the new joints droppin'. J Love and Star Saxon choppin' it up. Kick a verse, collab. Besides politics, I stay in the lab. A similar to flex, droppin' the bomb. Write that murder for the dub, CNN.com. I'm the wisdom that'll help your man spot the undercovers. The block that supplies and feeds you and your brothers. The hunger that'll take your hustle to another level. The courage under fire while you letting off the metal. The shine in your bezel when you recognize your worth. The instinct to pop off first. I'm the truth in your lies. The feeling that you other podcasts despise. After you analyze and start to realize,
ain't none of y'all better.
What y'all know about
putting my work
on the block?
Ain't none of y'all better.
Let
you know it's so real.
Is it real?
Yeah, sir. Ain't none of y'all better.
What y'all know about
putting my work
on the block?
Ain't none of y'all better.
Let you know it's so real.
Microphone Masters, J Love here. We may be joined by the other special guest, but I have a special guest in the building, the one and only Michael Myers. And then he has a project, that a collaborative project that he put out with Pause One. And so he may be joining us during this conversation, man. But how you doing?
I'm good, man. How about you, man? You know, it's been a minute, but all is good.
Yeah, I can't complain, man. I cannot complain. Looking forward to chopping it up with you and getting inside the head of a supreme lyricist who has been in this game for a minute. And I'm not trying to date you. I think we probably are around the same age. But I remember I was going to try to find it for this conversation just to show you that CD with the, you know, with the Wake Up Show freestyles on it. And how on it. I think it might have been volume one. I forget what volume it was, but you're on there a couple of times. You know, there's exhibits on there. Defari's on there. Eminem's on there and stuff like that. And that's kind of where how I found out about you. And so, you know, do you ever feel like you've been like you're a vet in that way? Or do you still feel as young and hungry as you were when you first started to write your first rhymes?
No, I definitely feel like I'm a vet, bro. I definitely feel like that, man. I feel like, you know, a lot of the cats that, you know, are doing it now, I definitely feel like the elder statesman for sure.
Got you. I know that there's we definitely want to get into the project with you and Pause One called Double Homicide, and I think it is appropriately titled. But so when you're in those conversations and feeling like that elder statesman, I want to ask this. What is a day in the life of Michael Myers like in terms of are you writing all the time, or do you just kind of pick and choose when you write? Because I remember, because I spit a little bit myself, and I remember there was a time where it didn't matter if it was on the side of an envelope I'm writing, or right. When I was sitting in class going through my undergrad and my master's and stuff like that, and I'd write when I was done listening to the lesson, all that stuff. And now I kind of am more selective on when I'm doing it. What's that process like for you?
Oh, it's definitely the same for me, man. I don't write nearly as much as I used to, man, some 20-some years ago.
Yeah.
Back then, the Wake Up Show days, man, I probably tried to write a song a day, a verse a day. You know what I'm saying? Now I kind of, you know, write when the mood strikes. I got so much that I got on my plate nowadays, man. I'm in a doctoral program, man, so I spend most of my days writing papers and reading books, so... but when the mood strikes, though, you know what I'm saying? Like I got an email from my man Aguilar yesterday. He wants to get on the joint, so I'm gonna start writing in a day or two for that. But it's kind of when the mood strikes, though.
Okay, so let's get into that, because I myself and a good friend of mine, we often kind of talk about whether or not we wanted to go into a doctoral program. And of course, you know, because you're in the midst of it, that's people say you got to be crazy to go through that. I mean, it takes a total different type of dedication. What is the program that you're in, and how long have you been in the process of working towards that goal?
I'm in the EDD program. So it's the Educational Leadership and Social Justice program.
Yeah.
I'm in... I think week 8 of the first year.
Okay.
So I'm still trying to get, you know, find my footing. You know what I'm saying? I got a stack of books right here I'm looking at, you know what I'm saying? And just trying to find my footing, man. But it's been a great experience, man. And you know, I'm a school psychologist by trade, so
okay.
I'm trying to take that next step into, you know, admin and hopefully one day I get to be a superintendent, man, where I really want to get into the policy of it all, you know what I'm saying? And try to destroy this school to prison pipeline thing that we got going on. So
yeah, a lot of different things, and I'm sure you see it, but especially being kind of around education, where there are definitely it's a flawed system for sure.
Oh, for sure, man. Yeah. It's a very antiquated system, man. There's still a lot of rules that were created post World War II, man, that we still try to, you know, implement today. So you know, it's fascinating. You know, I said I started my first real job as a teacher and then as a probation officer for about 17 years, and now I'm back in the education field, man. So it's kind of full circle for me. And so I definitely want to get into the policy change, man, because a lot of this foolishness going on, it just needs to be disrupted.
And I hope you, again, don't mind me taking it down this road a little bit, because I think it's just, you know, stay the course, and I'm sure you'll have nights where you want to, you know, I was going to say pull your hair out, but you get what I'm saying. but I was a substitute teacher for a while when I was going through my master's program. And I remember walking into a classroom, and there was this little black girl, I think it was a fifth grade classroom, and she was so happy to see me. Mr. Adams, I'm so happy that you're in our class. And I was thinking, why? But she said, because I don't see anybody that looks like us.
Bad.
In terms of black teachers, and
right.
that always stayed with me. Just the fact that if you don't see people, sometimes they look like you, and it's not just the fact that they look like you, but it just helps you to be able to realize you never know what you can be until you see other people doing it, and that helps
right.
you to be able to understand. Oh, I can do that too. I can do that too, and it opens up the possibilities.
Right. No doubt. Like, I definitely see that a lot, especially within my district. I think I'm the only male. Psychologist, so they often call me the unicorn, so I get it, you know what I'm saying? So you know, when parents meet me, they're like, oh my god, you need to talk to my son, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I definitely noticed that in meetings I'm one of few, so the higher I get, the less of us it is. So you know, I'm trying to take it to the top, so hopefully I can change that.
All right. So again, Microphone Masters here with the one and only Michael Myers. Again, we're going to talk about the project Double Homicide. So here's one of the things that was mentioned. I think Pause One said in some information that I have that, you know, you guys crossed paths a couple times at some shows and then did a couple songs together and just figured, hey, this, why not try to make it a project? How often, because I'm sure you've had throughout your career times where maybe you maybe wanted to do something with somebody, a collaborative project, and then maybe the chemistry wasn't there or whatever. How do you know when it's right to step forward and say, hey, let's give this a go and make a project or make an EP or whatever that length of that project might be?
Yeah, no doubt. I feel like it's usually timing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was supposed to do several projects with several peoples over the course of my 25-year career in this music business, man. And
right.
Sometimes they come together, sometimes they don't. A lot of it has to do with timing. I think, you know, we started talking about this idea, I want to say like 2017 or something like that. And,
gotcha.
You know, he was on tour. Every time he was on tour, I was on tour or vice versa. So we never had a chance to kind of really sit down and kind of make it work. And then COVID happened. And so with that, it kind of, you know, it kind of lends itself to giving us a little more time and freedom to kind of, you know, be able to do things. And it was strange, too, because it was like right when we were in the midst of finishing that project, I was in the midst of, it was like the heart of COVID. So I think it was like April of 2020, something like that, where everything, you know, in LA or California was shut down. So
yeah.
It was hard to get studios. It was hard to do a lot of stuff. And I was in the midst of, during all the social justice stuff that was coming out, man, I was in the midst of where creatively I was all over the place. So
okay.
It took a long time for me to really focus in on this specific project, just because like, I wasn't in the Killing Mike's frame of mode. I was kind of more in the, you know, I got a story to tell kind of mode. So it was probably, I wouldn't say it was my most difficult project, but it was definitely a difficult because of the timing of kind of where I was creatively, you know what I'm saying? So I did an album, I did four albums last year. So I ended up writing I don't know, 42 songs in like 36 days, which is, for me, is unprecedented nowadays with kids and, you know, wife and jobs and masters and then the doctoral program. So
yes, sir.
I was on a burner to where I couldn't stop writing. And so in between that, we did this project.
Now, you mentioned something that, because I started working remotely right around March of 2020. And so I'm still working remotely. And one of the things that I did probably around maybe around June-ish, because I recorded stuff, but my partner said, why don't you're there at home, why don't you just get yourself, you know, we're talking on this mic that I ended up purchasing in a pre-Sonus, you know, to be able to plug into the laptop and some of those things. And I thought, I'm about to churn out all kinds of material. But what I found is that because I'm in this office 8 hours a day, and then it's hard for me to just swivel and turn my mind off because I was disconnected from people. You know, I got a wife and kids as well. And it was a challenge for me to overcome that. How were you able to, like you said, you was on a burner for a while, churning out so many songs. How were you able to cut through that?
Kind of like you, man. Like I you know, got me a pre-signed setup too. and started really kind of going to work. I mean, I already had kind of a pseudo studio at home anyways, kind of where I do beats. I do a lot of stuff for film, a lot of stuff for TV shows and whatnot. So I always had like a setup, but I never really was comfortable turning out music for albums in that space just because I can't like get that energy that I could when I'm in a regular studio. Right. So I do a lot of demos here, but like, you know, doing something I got to turn in to get mastered, I just never felt comfortable until recently. So, I had to have somebody come in and set it up for me. You know what I'm saying? I had to make sure it was kid proof. So they don't be coming in there and trying to make, you know, trying to be the next YouTube star on my hookup. So
true.
It was difficult, but the difficult part was really getting into that space of what people know me for is that, you know, Michael Myers, Braggadocious, you know, MC stuff. It was difficult for me to tap into that for a while. And I was getting kind of nervous because like my head wasn't there. My head was all in social justice and that type of stuff. So it took me a minute to kind of get out of that funk. And I had a lot to do with not being out, not being at shows and not, you know, seeing MCs and, you know, a lot of stuff that I speak on really come from stuff I see at shows or stuff I don't like when I see MCs at shows. So it usually material comes from that. So I didn't have that to grab from. So that's why it was more difficult than it should have been.
Again, we're here with Michael Myers here on Microphone Master. So you mentioned something that I think is kind of interesting. So again, when you knowing you for that, being that, you know, this braggadocious, super lyrical guy, is that so? Was there trepidation or some hesitation that came into play when, hey, I have something different that I want to talk about? You might know me for this, but I'm not just that. I don't exist in a vacuum. Was that part of the challenge as well?
Man, that's been a challenge my whole career. Okay. I think every time I've tried to step out of the box, I think my core fan base has not either appreciated it or it put me in a different space where I had a different audience and they just wasn't feeling it. You know what I'm saying? So I'd always been, you know, if I'm being honest, always kind of been as an artist scared to step out of that proverbial box, you know, more than just a song or two or three, you know what I'm saying? And so for this like particular project, I put out 4 chapters, 10 songs each. And it was trying to really touch on stuff at a time. And I think I needed it more for my discography than maybe my fans want it. But this time I really wasn't scared to step out that box as I would normally been. Okay. But, you know, when you're angry and you're writing from the anger space, then things start to all sound the same. Right. Okay. So then I had 20 songs that sound like the last 20 songs. And I was like, okay, yeah, I got it out of my system now. Let me get back into something else. And then I don't know, man, I think I'm constantly motivated by new MCs. So I think RJ Payne's, a lot of the videos he had been putting out were kind of giving me life to kind of touch back on that MC thing again. So I think that was kind of, that got me out of that space. But yeah, trepidation always.
So along those lines, when it comes to, I've seen interviews with, say, a Touré or with the Sky Zoo where they're doing some kind of some ghostwriting or doing some of those things. Have you ever lent your pen behind the scenes for artists? I know you mentioned doing some scoring, some music in movies and TV and things like that. Do you branch out in other ways as well?
Yeah, I've been ghostwriting since like 96.
Okay.
I think a lot of times, man, just me personally, you know, record labels and companies have asked me to come in and do a certain type of rap that I just didn't want to represent myself. You right. know what I'm saying? Like, my own person, like, I couldn't go out and be the next 50 Cent. And that's no disrespect to 50 Cent. But, yeah. you know, I don't sell drugs. You know what I'm saying? And I work with kids most of the day. So right. I don't necessarily put that persona out there when I know that I'm working with kids that really sell drugs. You know what I mean? So,
right, right.
But if you're just talking, putting pen to paper, yeah, I can do that. You know what I'm saying? And make a song that sounds like whatever they want to hear. So different labels have employed me over the years to do ghostwriting for a lot of different artists.
I always think that's interesting. I guess if you're a good writer, then you're able to paint pictures. And so was it difficult the first time doing that, or has whenever you're called upon to be able to do that, is it just a matter of kind of like getting into a character, so to speak, like you're an author of a mystery this time, and then next time it's more of an adventure, or et cetera, et cetera. Is it kind of,
yeah, it's like that approach? Now. Okay. It's like that now. In the beginning, it wasn't. In the beginning, it was just me writing raps and then just leaving my name out of it. You know what I mean? And then it started to come to learning, I like to sit with artists for a minute to kind of get some of their personal flavor into what it is I'm writing for them. You know what okay. I'm saying? So when I do write for them, it sounds like something that they would say based on conversations and things that I would have. And I think I learned that from, forget what MC that I seen somebody say. I seen an artist say that. Matter of fact, you know, it was what's my man? Neo.
Okay.
Me and Neo, I've known Neo since the early 90s, when he was trying to get a deal with BMI way back when. And we used to kind of sit in the lobby while we were waiting for separate meetings or whatever, and he would just kind of say, I was trying to write this for this, and I was trying to write this for that person. I try to really get into their personality to try to write so it sounds authentic for them. And so I always thought that was clever. And so I've always kind of took that into consideration.
Michael Myers here on Microphone Master. So I want to ask about it when it comes to, do you ever look back and have any regrets in terms of maybe opportunities that you passed on? Maybe you were because the timing wasn't right, or because you maybe were just a little bit scared is probably the wrong thing, but maybe just a little bit too hesitant. Were there any regrets along your way that maybe ended up being something big that you passed on?
I can't say I have any regrets okay. of things that I passed on. I would say that I got passed over a lot of times by just different situations, man. So just to give you an example, one of my first real, like, serious managers, his name is Joseph Weinberger, he left me for this producer out of Chicago by the name of Kanye West. So, like, I remember having that conversation with him, thinking, like, he was like, yeah, I got this artist. I really want to focus on him. I think he can be the next big thing, whatever. And I remember at the time feeling like, you know, what about me? Why you can't do both? You know what I'm saying? I had right. barely heard of Kanye West at the time. This was, like, pre-Blueprint, right? So, I remember him leaving me for that, right? And then back early on, man, my early demo days, man, cat by the name of Don Jaguar used to rock with. He was trying to get me a deal with Ice Cube. And so it came down to two artists. It came down to me and an artist by the name of Mac 10. Yeah. Right. So I got passed over again. So as far as regrets, no. I don't even regret those moments. I think I've made a pretty decent career for what I wanted to do. I just, you know, at this point now, being 47 years old, man, I don't know if being a superstar MC would have been the path of choice, to be honest.
You mentioned something that's interesting, and because I want to then kind of ask about your, you know, what your expectations are for this Double Homicide project. But you, in terms of if I tell my a partner of mine that I perform with and record with, I said, man, we could have been, we were like a version of the Hieroglyphics. And I was thinking, and we always kind of talk about that. And it is, of course, it's like that, it's that athlete that says, if the coach would have just put me in the game, dog, but here's the thing, the sacrifices that would have needed to be made along the way. Would I have a wife and two beautiful kids? Would I be all the different, what, you know, the different path that it would take? Is that, is there some of those things that, that you ever think about and being happy where you are now, but realizing that it could have taken you a totally different way in terms of maybe where your life would have been? Not saying for the worse, but just a different type of happiness, quite possibly.
Yeah, like it could have went a lot of different ways. You know what I mean? And you know, I had a, I don't know, 10-year career by the time I met my wife. So it kind of was just you know, she pushed me forward to get to be better at business, to be honest. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Just certain things that she would see contractually or through different agreements. And it's even just how I just the self-worth of, you know, when you're an artist, you're a starving artist, you kind of take crumbs because you feel like you're just hungry and you want to do it. You know what I'm saying? I had to really find out. It wasn't until I had children that I realized that my time was more valuable than I had originally put out there. You know what I'm saying? So could I have been the next whoever? Maybe. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, fact of the matter is I'm not. I did have some great opportunities in my career, man. I been lucky enough to get, you know, nominated for Grammys for music that I've done for television and, you know, Oscars for movies and whatnot. So I can't be too mad. You know what I'm saying? I made a pretty good penny off this music thing. Like I may not be, for me, it was never really about being famous, more so than it was about getting respect. Makes sense. That was what I got into it for. And long as I've always kept that mantra. So I'm never really disappointed in anything that I do.
And speaking of disappointed, not disappointed in this project at all. But I know it was just released a couple of weeks ago. What's the response been like that you've heard? And when you go into a project, you know, it, with so many balls kind of in the air, juggling, so to speak, different things that are important. What are your expectations? What makes a successful project to you when you look at it? And what's the response been like early on?
As long as it's like, if I feel good about it, and I feel like it was my best foot forward, then kind of the chips fall. You know what I mean? I know towards the end of it, that's kind of when I was starting the doctoral program. So Paul's kind of really took the reins on making sure the artwork was fire and, you know, making sure different things was ready to go and things was hot. So once I heard kind of like the, because we did, you know, several demos of here, this and that and whatever, and so to get the final project and hear what it was, I'm happy with that. So, like, usually with the chips kind of fall. For me, I know over my 20-some-odd-year career, I've built a lane of fans to where I know I'm going to sell this every time I put something out. Okay. So I'm usually happy with that, and I'm usually happy with the financial return in that. I think the difference is with this one, because things are just kind of still opening up via COVID. So we weren't able to tour like we should have, weren't able to really do the live performances, you know, that's kind of when you, for me, it's kind of when you really get the full response of how good a record is how the crowd responds to it by the time you get to their city. And, but with that being said, man, the chatter that I've been hearing online has been phenomenal. So, I'm happy with that. So, you know what I'm saying? As long as Paul's is happy, then I'm happy with it.
So I got it. You mentioned something in terms of being nominated for a Grammy, you said, right?
Yeah.
All right. So my wife says to me, so when she's watching some of these award shows and she says, what if you were nominated for something, would you want to go? And I say, no, I don't care about that. I don't care about that. Did you ever think that way? And then once you were nominated, did it change your view on it? Because I'm sure that if I receive a nomination, I might be up there. You know, I got nominated for a Grammy.
Right.
So does it change? What was your thought before, once you were nominated?
Luckily for me, man, early in my career, I was attached to a few different people that I was able to kind of be at the Grammys before. So I've been with the Grammys with the Black Eyed Peas. I've been at the Grammys with Coolio. Okay. So I knew what that meant. So for me to get my name in the mix,
was everything. And yeah, I was like, oh, I don't really care about that stuff until I got that invite. You know what I'm saying? And I got that swag bag, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, this is legit. I can do this. You know,
okay.
I'm gonna keep it a buck, but especially for people that do music that I do. You know what I'm saying? To be in a movie like The 40-Year-Old Virgin and to be nominated for that, even though we didn't win, it was still, you know, it was in a, you know, it treated me like royalty, man. Like, and I think I was in the movie for all of 3 seconds. You know what I'm saying? And, sure. But that's a check that most underground artists will never get. Right, I still get paid for that. Every time you see it on Netflix, TBS, HBO, Cinemax, whatever, I get a check for that. So it's those things that I didn't even see when I got into the game. It wasn't even about that. I never thought I would ever be there. So those are the things that I kind of remember the most, like the TV shows, the commercials. Like, who knew? Who would have thought this MC from Carson, man, that was able to do 4 years in a row of Super Bowl commercials?
Huh, so, I heard that.
Who knew?
I heard that. So let folks know where they can follow you, where they can stay in touch with you. And I definitely want to have you back. We can take an even deeper dive in, because I know you're a busy man, but definitely want to check in with you on your process and your journey towards that doctoral degree. But where can people stay in touch with you and support this new project as well?
Yeah, man. Catch me on Instagram at Michael Myers Official. You can catch me on Facebook at Mike Arrington. You catch me on Twitter at Michael Myers, man, and I'm there, dude. Like, I really speak to fans. Like, it's really me. It's not somebody representing me. It's usually me. If I don't get back to you right away, it's because I'm really that busy. But I will definitely get back to you. And the album is everywhere digitally. We are starting to take pre-sales for vinyl and cassettes. We're probably going to print up some T-shirts and the album cover as well.
Okay.
I think we're probably going to do 3 versions of it. We might do a Paul solo one, a me solo one, and then us together, and then the album cover as a whole, and even the back cover. And probably working on some masks. If COVID sticks around long enough, we might make a couple dollars off a mask or two.
Right.
And you catch us there, man. Or you catch Paul. Paul's just starting, you know, he's back out on the road again. So, but yeah, you catch us there, man. I appreciate the time, man. Appreciate the love and respect, man. And hit me up anytime, man. We can make this happen.
That's what's up. And you have been listening to Microphone Masters.